This is Dan Navarro, host of Strikeline here on KPFK Los Angeles. Join me this Wednesday at 5 p.m. for a repeat performance of Strikeline Episode 4 with hit TV series regular Jason George as we talk about what's at stake in the now 83-day strike between SAG-AFTRA and the AMPTP, with both parties back in the room this week for the first time since July 14th. That's Strikeline this Wednesday at 5 p.m. at KPFK 90.7 FM and also at kpfk.org.
This is KPFK
90.7 FM,
Los Angeles.
Welcome to another episode of Gray Zone Radio. This week we'll listen to the first half of Friday's Gray Zone live stream. In this episode, Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté cover the international scandal that unfolded when the Liberal Party of Canada's Justin Trudeau honored a Ukrainian Nazi veteran of the Waffen-SS, and the dark history it forced to the surface. You can watch the full live stream and get notified of future live streams by subscribing to The Gray Zone on YouTube or signing up for our newsletter at thegrayzone.com, where you can also read The Gray Zone's investigative journalism. The audio from this live stream is also posted on the Max Blumenthal podcast, which you can find on podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter, Telegram, and Instagram. Now let's take a listen.
I wanted to call like an I should have called like an emergency stream or something, just because I'd never felt so vindicated before. Well, I mean, not in such an instantaneous way. It's always this gradual process of vindication. But in this case, it was like the mainstream media was saying what we've been saying for years, since 2014. Well, maybe they haven't quite come around to the contemporary Nazism. Aaron, what were your initial thoughts and reactions when you saw what which now astounds the world? On September 22nd, Canada's Parliament, while hosting another Zelensky panhandling session, honored with a rapturous standing ovation, a veteran of the Ukrainian Nazi Waffen-SS Galicia Division from World War II, one of the last living veterans in Canada, Yaroslav Hunka. What were your initial reactions?
First of all, since you raised the issue of the Gray Zone being vindicated, you really could make like a top 50 times the Gray Zone's been vindicated and talked about the Gray Zone being vindicated, because this does happen a lot. But it's interesting that it has to happen on this issue, because you shouldn't, of all the issues that are like no longer controversial in North American culture, Nazism is supposed to not be controversial. Everybody agrees the fact of the Nazi Holocaust happened. Everybody agrees that Nazism is bad, but yet our propaganda system is so powerful and the devotion to U.S. hegemony is so strong that when our government decides they're going to ally with Nazis as part of a long historical legacy, actually, of protecting Nazis, which goes back many, many years, including Canada, all of a sudden it becomes off limits. And when the Ukraine proxy war escalated with Russia's invasion, all of a sudden you couldn't acknowledge anymore that historically, not just in the last 8-9 years of the post-Maidan coup era, but for a long time, there's been this alliance between the West and the followers of Bandera in Ukraine, which includes a neo-Nazi contingent. And it took this standing ovation for a literal Nazi to break the taboo on that. Because, you know, you look at the apologies from the Canadian lawmakers, this is the first time I can recall, I mean, someone could correct me if I'm wrong, since Russia invaded, that there's been any kind of apology or reckoning whatsoever with the heavy Nazi, neo-Nazi contingent inside of Ukraine. And albeit in this case, it came with a veteran of the Nazi forces in World War II. But still, it did force a reckoning with who we're still currently supporting today, because the followers of units like the Waffen-SS are now still fighting in Ukraine, and we're still arming them, as the Gray Zone's been reporting on for many years. So,
yeah, I mean, it's because of the lack of scrutiny or the refusal to the deliberate denial of Nazism in contemporary Ukraine that the Ukrainian state, which is basically a client of the U.S., is sponsoring militant battalions, which are centered around Nazi ideology, like the Azov battalion. The deliberate denial, I mean, article after article after article, and while hiding behind Zelensky's nominal Jewishness, that they felt entitled and emboldened to honor an actual World War II era Nazi, back when Nazism was said to be bad. I think they thought they could just so easily get away with it. And you know, and we'll get into this, Chrystia Freeland knew who he was. And they read out his background. And if I was there, I would have instantly known it. And I would have jumped up and interrupted the whole thing. Like, you're honoring a Nazi. What are you doing? Are you crazy?
The speaker literally said he fought the Russians during World War II. So if you fought the Russians during World War II, that means you also fought against Canada and you also fought against the U.S. because these were the allies that fought the Nazis. So the fact that this whole chamber got up and applauded this guy, no, somebody must have. I mean, I don't expect all of them to make that leap because people are dumb and they don't let their brains make the obvious conclusions. But some people must have realized whose side he was on. And amazingly, too, you know, part of this history that gets erased in the process is that many, many more Ukrainians fought on the side of the Soviet Union because they were against Nazism. So this idea even that, like, you know, Ukrainians were in a tough position because they were caught between Nazis and Soviet Union, and so they had to make a choice. I mean, like, the Nazis were their best option against Soviet tyranny. Millions of Ukrainians, many more people than fought for the Nazis in Ukraine, made the choice to fight with the Soviet Union. But all that, again, because now Russophobia is just like the dominant trend, people can't make that connection in their heads, and they can get up and literally not only applaud someone who fought with Nazis, but fought against the Canadian side. I mean, that's how ridiculous this whole thing is.
Well, Alex Rubenstein made a video that I think captures the insanity of the past 2 years and the whitewashing of Nazism. I'll start kind of in the middle. But it really starts with just all the whitewashing behind the Zelensky washing, and it'll provide you with the scene inside Canada's parliament.
Zelensky is Jewish.
If Putin is to be believed, his intention is to demilitarize the country and denazify it, which is a ridiculous term.
His terminology, outrageous and obnoxious as it is, denazify. You know, you've got a Jewish president of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky.
In explaining why he was going to invade, he said, I'm going to denazify Ukraine. I mean,
look, it's the height of hypocrisy to call the Ukrainian nation to denazify it. Their president is Jewish, after all.
He says that he's working to denazify the country. He's talking about Nazis in Ukraine right now. President Zelensky, as you know, he's Jewish.
It's patently absurd. There is really no merit. You pointed out that Vladimir Zelensky is Jewish. The Jewish community is embraced. It's central to the country. And there is nothing to this Nazi narrative, fascist narrative. It's fabricated as a pretext.
What a compelling commentator and figure.
Here in Washington, they condemn Putin for uttering those kinds of words.
There's Zelensky meeting with the neo-Nazi C4 team. There he is giving an award to the head of Right Sector. Gray Zone, baby. We've been doing this since 2014. There's Zelensky meeting with Andrei Beletsky, the founder of Azov. He said, how can we describe our enemy? The Judeo-Bolsheviks. Race is everything for nation building. Race is the basis on which the infrastructure grows.
Chamber today, Ukrainian-Canadian world veteran.
Canadian speaker Anthony Rota.
From the Second World War, who fought the Ukrainian independence against the Russians and continues to support the troops today.
Obviously, it's extremely upsetting that this happened.
Yeah, it's just upsetting. You thought you could get away with it. Trudeau's issued directives to his aides, and initially issued directives to just ignore it, that it would go away, because it had gone away before. But this time, something snapped. And it was largely thanks to the opposition media, the opposition political parties, the conservative party, that this got out there. But they were clapping for him, too. The conservative party under Stephen Harper, they supported, their foreign ministry supported neo-Nazis during the Maidan coup when they invaded City Hall in 2014. The C-14 neo-Nazi hooligans and festooned the walls with Nazi swastikas, with a Confederate flag, with the white, like Celtic white power symbols and Bandera posters. When they were chased out by riot police, they fled to the Canadian embassy because Canada had an official policy of protecting them, just as they had an official policy of protecting Nazis after World War II, which we'll get into. But Aaron, I mean, we should react to Justin Trudeau's apologies because they're amazing.
They are. So as you said, this was reported that in a private meeting with lawmakers, he urged people not to talk about it because it was so embarrassing. And by the way, we have to credit the people responsible for getting this out. Ivan Kachanowski, University of Ottawa professor, who we've interviewed before at the Gray Zone, Ukrainian-Canadian scholar. He's faced all kinds of repression in Ukraine. He had asset seized. And what's his crime there?
Peer-reviewed papers censored.
He's been censored. And for what? Because he's been diligent in exposing the neo-Nazi movement inside Ukraine since 2014. And his work includes, I mean, many important texts, but one of his most important papers is a thorough examination of a pivotal event in the Maidan coup called the Maidan Massacre, where right before the coup of 2014, there was a massacre in Maidan Square where snipers shot and killed a whole bunch of people. And immediately Yanukovych, who was then the president, was blamed by the U.S. and their allies. And this led to a chain of events that led to basically more violence that forced Yanukovych to flee. And the change of regime happened. The regime change happened. And when this was justified, one of the things that's said is, well, you know, Yanukovych's forces committed this awful massacre of Maidan protesters. But Ivan Kachanowski have shown, based on witnesses, based on the forensic evidence, based on videotapes, he's spoken to a lot of people. He's also noted the fact that there's been almost no prosecutions at all inside Ukraine, which is very, very odd, that all the evidence shows that the snipers were on the pro-Maidan side. And there's a whole, it's exhaustive, all the work he's done. And so for doing that, for undercutting this key piece of propaganda used to justify the coup and the ensuing proxy war, he's been marginalized and subject to all sorts of vicious attacks. And because he's been consistent in not forgetting the legacy of Nazi victims, he called this out immediately on Twitter. He pointed out who this Nazi veteran was, and that set off a firestorm. And then Lev Galinkin, who's also done so much work on this since 2014 about the powerful far right inside Ukraine, he also wrote an article for the Jewish Daily Forward calling attention to this. And that set off this crisis that Justin Trudeau did not want to address, but now he's been forced to.
Well, yeah. And it's been independent media and independent academics like Ivan, who've been calling this out from the beginning. We'll highlight more of that when we get into Chrystia Freeland's record. But Justin Trudeau and his administration since the beginning have been blasting them all in McCarthyite fashion as Russian propagandists for telling the truth about Nazis. So here's Justin Trudeau's first reaction.
It's extremely upsetting that this happened. Well, the speaker has acknowledged his mistake and has apologized. But this is something that is deeply embarrassing to the Parliament of Canada and by extension to all Canadians. I think particularly of Jewish MPs and all members of the Jewish community across the country who are commemorating Yom Kippur today. I think it's going to be really important that all of us push back against Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation, and continue our steadfast and unequivocal support for Ukraine, as we did last week with announcing further measures to stand with Ukraine in Russia's illegal war against it.
Further measures.
It's like he's in a cult. It's like he's in a cult where you're just programmed to just repeat Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation.
He is.
These are all powerful unquestioned evil forces that just exist and that require no evidence at all to actually substantiate you. They just exist. It's like believing in a higher power, Russian disinformation. And of course, the implication here is that somehow Russia was responsible for getting Justin Trudeau and his Canadian colleagues to applaud a Nazi. That's somehow Russia's fault.
That they smuggled in this nonagenarian Nazi and then, you know, had the Queen of Hearts hypnotize Trudeau and all of his colleagues, Manchurian candidate style, into clapping for him. That's one implication. But the other kind of what Trudeau is trying to do is a form of hypnosis that has succeeded with so much of the public, particularly his base in the media. And what he's saying is, if you report on this, you are playing into Putin's hands. You're participating in Russian disinformation. You're helping Russia. So just don't. He's sending them the hypnotic signal, you know, when he's throwing up the Queen of Hearts and saying, just keep silent about this because Putin is lurking. Loose lips sink ships. And it didn't work. I mean, because people have had enough and this nonsense has been going on for too long. And then he does it again in his second apology, which was hilarious. I guess it's already on screen. So you're quicker with the pistol than me.
In a few moments, I will address the House in front of all Canadians, in front of Jewish people here and around the world, and Ukrainians, to offer Parliament's unreserved apologies for what happened on Friday. The Speaker was solely responsible for the invitation and recognition of this man, and has wholly accepted that responsibility and stepped down. This was a mistake that has deeply embarrassed Parliament and Canada. All of us who were in this house on Friday regret deeply having stood and clapped, even though we did so unaware of the context. It was a horrendous violation of the memory of the millions of people who died in the Holocaust, and it was deeply, deeply painful for Jewish people. It also hurt Polish people, Roma people, 2SLGBTQI+ people, disabled people, racialized people, and the many millions who were targeted by the Nazi genocide. Every year, fewer Holocaust survivors to share firsthand horrors of what they experienced. And it is therefore incumbent upon us all to ensure that no one ever forgets what happened. I also want to reiterate how deeply sorry Canada is for the situation this put President Zelensky and the Ukrainian delegation in. It is extremely troubling to think that this egregious error is being politicized by Russia and its supporters to provide false propaganda about what Ukraine is fighting for.
Well, I certainly am relieved that he apologized to Jewish people, Polish people, Roma people, and 2SLGBTQIA+ people. No, sorry, 2SLLGBTQI+ people. But I'm deeply offended that he didn't apologize to 2SLGBTQIA+ people, because asexuals were offended as well and deserve to be part of that quadratic formula. And now that we've apologized to all of them, as well as racialized people, I think we need to get back to the business of killing lots of Russians. It's the best money we've ever spent. And censoring people that Trudeau says have unacceptable views and seizing their bank accounts, because, I mean, that's what liberal Democrats do.
That's the key.
But, point, right? One person who didn't accept responsibility, Aaron, was Justin Trudeau.
Well, exactly. And that's the key point. But notice in his apology, he apologized to everybody except for Russians. The Soviet Union lost 27 million people to the Nazis. I mean, who knows the exact figure, but that's one estimate. 27 million people, at least millions of people. Country was decimated. They paid the biggest sacrifice. 10
million during Operation Barbarossa.
Yeah, I mean, of all the countries in the world, by far the biggest sacrifice to defeat the Nazis. And yet he's such a Nazi apologist. He's such a Russophobe that he can't even apologize to Russians because they don't count, you know, to him. And they also don't count because they're currently fighting a Ukrainian military that, whether Justin Trudeau wants to admit it or not, does have a neo-Nazi contingent in its armed forces. I don't agree with the Kremlin line that it's a Nazi regime. You don't have to accept that to point out that there's a huge neo-Nazi element inside Ukraine that is very influential. And yeah, doesn't isn't everybody in the government, but is a sizable force. And you know Justin Trudeau knows that and is embarrassed by it, because as you pointed out, there have been instances, and I know this from the Gray Zone, from the reporting you've done, when Canada has deleted photos of their military trainers meeting with the Azov battalion, right? Going back many years.
Yeah, let me bring that up, actually.
And it was reported that there was even some internal documents in the Ukraine, in the Canadian government, talking about how they were worried about this getting out, that they did not want the public to know that they were actually training and meeting with Azov because of the fallout. And so they've been trying to cover up. And Justin Trudeau knows that, yet he has the gall to go and say that and suggest that still that Russia is putting out false claims about Ukrainian ties to Nazis. This is the face of the Ukrainian government right now, is people in the armed forces who worship people like the same Nazi that the Canadian government applauded.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Azov Battalion founded by Andrei Beletsky, who was honored by Vladimir Zelensky several weeks ago, who said that the mission of Azov was to wage a holy crusade on behalf of the white races against the Semite-led Untermensch. And here's an American officer giving, you can see the patches there, an Azov, they're kind of exchanging a patch. I think they're exchanging patches, or I don't know what, or he's showing him like, hey, did you see these skulls of Iraqis that I found? Yeah, they're exchanging insane patches. Like, look at that. What's going on there? That looks like a fascistic. You have Canadians as well. And Azov was asked to delete this. And it's kind of like with Justin Trudeau. He's the more effective patron of Nazi battalions because he's able to rattle off the rainbow political talking points, and he's able to apologize to racialized people. I mean, can you imagine if a right-wing leader did this, or if like Donald Trump was caught doing this, how American media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, Financial Times, they've basically swept this thing under the rug, how they would react? It would be front page. I mean, it's basically thanks to like some corporate run conservative publications that it's having any traction at all, but it's definitely outraged regular people all over the world. The Polish Minister of Education has demanded the extradition of Jaroslaw Hunka. So, I mean, if you don't think it's like disgusting that Justin Trudeau is deploying rainbow politics here, you have completely lost the plot and you don't understand what's happening. How liberalism in the West is actually the more effective steward of sponsoring jihadi factions in Syria or fascistic neo-Nazis in Ukraine as proxies to dissolve the Russian Federation through violence. It's because they seem so dissimilar from them that they can't possibly be backing them. But this is what's been happening since the 1950s. And the number two in charge in Canada, Chrystia Freeland, we should watch her reaction. She is a product of that policy, and she is a hardcore social liberal and fanatically neoconservative on foreign policy. And her history is actually fascinating.
And as you pointed out, when there was that Canadian trucker protest a few years ago against mandates, it was Justin Trudeau who was literally calling them Nazis, right? Because some random people were seen with flags with swastikas on them. But as I understand, even those people were not trying to support Nazism. They were trying to compare the pandemic measures to Nazism, to fascism, that was the use of those Nazi flags. Regardless, whether they were...
Well, wait a minute. Sorry to interrupt, but there was just one guy with a mask on and a Nazi flag who was running around, and it looked like he was there just to implicate them. And okay, then the whole media focused on that.
Right, right. So he calls them... So then, based on that...
These are people with unacceptable views, and then he and Chrystia Freeland proceeded to shut down their bank accounts.
Yeah.
They tried to seize their GoFundMe, which set the stage for the suspension of ours. they declared emergency law, sent in the federal police with truncheons and tear gas, and cleared Ottawa of this protest, which broke, it finally broke Canada's COVIDian regime. And that was a huge blow to Justin Trudeau, but he got away with it there. And then like a few weeks later, it was like one PSYOP shifted to the next. Once they broke the mandates and the lockdowns, and it just started all falling apart across the West. And then it was like the Ukraine proxy war started, and Chrystia Freeland appears in Toronto at a Ukrainian nationalist gathering, you know, against Russia's invasion. And she grabs hold of a UPA flag or a UPA banner and displays it. The Ukrainian Partisan Army, which was actually more hardcore in many ways than the Waffen-SS Galicia, at least their leadership was more overtly anti-Semitic, and they participated in numerous anti-Jewish pogroms. So this is Chrystia Freeland, the number two, and she got away with it again. It was like, oh, she just deleted that. She always deletes everything. And
by the way, Kurt Metzger, by the way, has a joke where he says that, yes, it was wrong for Russia to invade Ukraine, but it did end COVID.
Yeah, I remember that was like kind of the upshot.
Yeah.
It was like a, you know, it moved things along in our psyopathy. This is one of the most tortured answers I've ever seen from a major Western politician. And the question cuts right to the heart of who Chrystia Freeland is, as we'll illustrate.
There are calls by B'nai B'rith to reopen a report by the Duchesne Commission so that Canadians can know how many veterans who fought with the Nazis are here in our country. Will the government do so? And what is your response to that?
I don't know what to say.
You know, let me just start by reiterating, and I don't think it can be said too many times, how hurtful for so many people in Canada and around the world what happened was and has been and continues to be. As MPs, in our capacity as MPs, it's important for appropriate next steps in the House to be taken. And I think that is our immediate focus. And as a government, we're going to be very thoughtful about any further steps that need to be taken.
Well, she didn't say anything there. You know how when you get like, if you feel like you have to apologize to someone, maybe like in a work situation or it's your romantic partner or whatever, or you get called to the principal in elementary school and they make you apologize, and it's like you just want to see, you want to say, well, I'm really sorry for the hurt that this has caused, or I'm sorry for how it made you feel, because you know you didn't do anything wrong, but somebody just overreacted. That's kind of what her apology is like. Like, none of these officials in the Liberal Party have said, well, it just offended me. I am disgusted and I take responsibility because I didn't know. They've made Anthony Rota, the speaker, fall on his sword, and then none of them will take responsibility. And they also just say that it hurt somebody else, some other community. And then they just rattle off the names of all these different communities.
And she can't give a straight answer to the question that she got of, would you support reopening an investigation of Canada's welcoming of Nazi war criminals? Because she's personally implicated in that, right? And talk to us about that, Max, because you've done a lot of work on this well before all this blew up, about her family history, her grandfather basically being a Nazi propagandist.
Well, Kurt Metzger had another good joke, which is like, this has allowed Canada to say sorry, like S-O-R-E-Y. If you listen to the apologies, they're all like, sorry. I don't know where that comes from, but Michael Chomiak was the name that one of Hitler's top propagandists in Ukrainian-occupied Poland chose when he came to Canada in the 1950s as part of the Rat Line with other, maybe 2,000 other SS veterans, Nazi collaborators from the Baltic states and Ukraine. And it was said that all they had to do, this is according to a historian, a Canadian historian named Irving Abella, who covered this and appeared in a 60 Minutes special, we'll excerpt in a second, we'll show in a second, that all they had to do is show their SS tattoos to get into Canada at a time when Jewish immigrants or the Jews who had been in the displaced persons camps after the war, who had lost their entire families in the genocide, were being put in barbed wire camps in Canada. There were 8 barbed wire camps filled with Jews. Some of these Nazi collaborators spent time in these camps, but they were quickly naturalized and made citizens. The Jews were seen as objects of suspicion because they were considered communists. The Nazi collaborators were considered potential strike breakers by manufacturing interests in Canada, industry, and an anti-communist shock troop to prevent the rise of socialism or the growth of socialism and communism in Canada after the war, when the Communist Party had a very good reputation because they had helped run the resistance all over Europe. So they're there. Michael Chomiak's there. He had run a paper called Krakow News, which recruited for the Waffen-SS Galicia, which celebrated Hitler, which was later to determine to have fueled anti-Semitic violence, including pogroms and the clearing of the Krakow ghetto. The Krakow ghetto was formed by Ernest Gassner, who was a close ally of Chomiak's boss, whose name was Vladimir Kobolevich. And Kobolevich helped actually personally form the Waffen-SS Galicia, working under Gassner, who was the governor of Galicia for the Nazis. And he said this upon its formation: "This historic day was made possible by the conditions to create a worthy opportunity for the Ukrainians of Galicia to fight arm in arm with the heroic German soldiers of the army and the Waffen-SS against Bolshevism, you and our deadly enemy." Kobolevich also came to Canada and formed the UCC, the Ukrainian Canadian Congress, of which Freeland's family were members. Kobolevich also started the Encyclopedia of Ukraine. It's available online, and gave Chrystia Freeland her first job as a researcher and journalist. She then went to work for another publication, which he was involved in, where her father had served as editor, called Ukrainian News. And here's an article she contributed to in Ukrainian News about the Holodomor, which is what Ukrainians call the Ukrainian nationalists believe this is the ultimate genocide, Stalin's forced famine in Ukraine as part of his collectivization policies during the early 1930s. She's writing about it with David Marples. And then on another page, I just put this side by side together of the same issue, there is an ad for a book glorifying the Waffen-SS Galicia, Fighting for Freedom, the Ukrainian Volunteer Division of the Waffen-SS. Chrystia Freeland had been raised in Ukrainian nationalist youth groups, including groups that had gone to Ukraine and participated in ceremonies glorifying the Waffen-SS. She was indeed her dado's granddaughter, following in his footsteps as a journalist all the way back to Ukraine, where, according to KGB files, which were unearthed by Canadian media, she was acting as a de facto spy, working with actual intelligence officers out of the Canadian embassy in Kiev. This is during the Soviet era, working with so-called underground forces who were Ukrainian regime change agents, and then feeding Western press with quote unquote misinformation, basically any information flow that made the Soviet Union bad. One of her closest allies there was Bill Keller, who was the editor of the New York Times, eventually became editor in chief. And she was doing all of this under academic cover while she was and a major in Russian studies and Russian literature at Harvard. She wasn't even working a journalistic job, but she was fixing everything on the ground for all of these Western reporters who were determined to see the fall of the Iron Curtain. And that's how she set herself up for journalistic success. Through that networking, she eventually rose to global editor of Reuters, which is the largest media agency in the world. And as we exposed at the Gray Zone, is an intelligence cutout for the British Foreign Office for operations, covert operations against Russia, including the training of Russian journalists as regime change agents. We revealed that through classified Foreign Office documents. There's no disputing that that is the truth. So Chrystia Freeland then in 2013 goes into Canadian politics as a member of parliament, as a liberal in Toronto, and her main objective was to use politics as a springboard for initiating war with Russia. That was so obvious when in 2014, she became one of the lead voices in Canada and across the West, calling for the West to arm Ukraine, to be more militant in forcing out the elected president Yanukovych during Maidan. And then three years after Yanukovych is ousted in a violent coup, she is made foreign minister. When she's made foreign minister, that's when independent publications like Consortium News, founded by the great late Robert Perry, which has no connection to Russia at all, it's an American publication, unearthed the past of Chrystia Freeland and her grandfather, Michael Chomiak. And Chrystia Freeland and Justin Trudeau and that whole administration did exactly what they tried to do with Yaroslav Hunko, which is to first brand it all as Russian disinformation. And number two, she lied. She just openly lied. I mean, I could bring up the article, but just to keep it rolling, I mean, she had a spokesperson tell Canadian media, the Globe and Mail, on March 6, 2017, this is that her grandfather was not a Nazi collaborator. The next day, they published a piece in Globe and Mail, not exactly a Russian state media publication, citing an article from 1996 chronicling Michael Chomiak's role as a top Nazi propagandist. Who wrote the article? It was John Paul Himka, who is the uncle of Chrystia Freeland. And in the preface to that article, he acknowledged Chrystia Freeland's help, his niece's help in corrections and clarifications. So she knew, she lied, she was exposed for lying, and then it was all swept under the rug. And how could she not have known, given all of this history, given how deeply embedded she was in the entire Ukrainian nationalist network, that she didn't know that Yaroslav Hunko was himself a Nazi? And when you look at the image of applause, she was applauding like a seal clamoring for chum at SeaWorld or something. Like, she was so happy. It was like a rapturous moment for her. So I think this really should prompt her resignation. If we do hold Nazis in contempt still, Chrystia Freeland should be forced out of politics forever. Give her some think tank job, give her a lanyard or something, but just get her out of there, because she is perpetuating the Nazi legacy of her grandfather through this war and continuing to lie.
And there was talk of her becoming the next Secretary General of NATO, right? She really wanted that job. That was obviously something that she was going for.
And yep.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you think politically she can survive this? She should in any normal, healthy culture. But we're so now in the thrall of neocons and neocon dogma that maybe even something like this would not be enough to sink her career. Obviously, it should. But becoming NATO Secretary General, I think that looks farther out of reach, because this is humiliating, no matter how hard she tries to bury it.
She should, but the Conservative Party's weak in Canada at this point. I mean, there are a lot of developments in Canada to cover. There have been huge protests against the teaching of gender ideology in Canadian public schools by Muslims who are part of the Liberal Party's base. Like, their base leans heavily on immigrants. And these are Muslim-led protests that are large, from Montreal into Hamilton, which is just outside Toronto, that are putting pressure on Trudeau. Trudeau's unpopular. He's leaning heavily on Jagmeet Singh from the NDP to his left. And Singh is in the middle of this whole other scandal, which is fascinating, where India is accused of assassinating a wanted terrorist, someone they wanted as a terrorist, who is a leader of the Khalistani separatist movement, which consists of Sikh activists. And the NDP is wrapped up in this, demanding sanctions on India, all kinds of actions against India, because it's, and its leader is Sikh. So there, this increases diplomatic pressure on Canada. I think India is more powerful than it's been on the world stage at any point. And one of the points they keep making is that Justin Trudeau is pushing this because he's so unpopular. By the way, Hardeep Singh Nijjar was filmed training with AK-47s at a camp, a training camp in British Columbia. It looks like he was being protected by Canadian intelligence. People in the Khalistani movement have had dinner with Justin Trudeau. So this is a separate scandal that kind of, but it does really relate to extremist elements and using Canada to advance their policies, their agenda on the world stage, and the Liberal Party kind of playing along. But like, let's go back to Chrystia Freeland. Here's the scene in Parliament as she attempted to erase the record as she had before. And this, to me, really was the culmination of this entire scandal, where they tried to strike the applause and the celebration of Jaroslav Hunka from the record. And you can see her just nodding along.
To ask for unanimous
there she is to the left.
To adopt the following motion: that notwithstanding any standing order, special order, or usual practice of the House, the recognition made by the Speaker of the House of an individual present in the galleries during a joint address to Parliament by His Excellency Volodymyr Zelensky be struck from the appendix of the House of Commons debates of Thursday, September 21st, 2023, and from any House multimedia recording. Thank you.
See, you can see her just nodding, like, let's do this. Orwell style, strike it from the record. So there's no record of me cheering. I think that independent media has played such an important role in bringing this all to the surface, and independent academics like Ivan Kachanovsky. And we just have to keep forcing the issue, because it is, as Justin Trudeau said, it is personally offensive to me. Aaron, I know your family escaped the Holocaust. It's disgusting that Canada has been so invested in protecting the people who participated in the Holocaust of bullets. Part of my family is from what is now Ukraine, and they got out like maybe a year before Stepan Petlura led pogroms in the city of Justingrad, which is like south of Kiev. They were from there. And, you know, the synagogue they prayed in was burned. Thousands of people were killed. And Petlura himself was assassinated by a Jewish socialist named Simon Schwarzbad as revenge for that pogrom. There are streets named after Petlura all across Kiev today. He's upheld as a hero and one of the godfathers of Ukrainian nationalism. So I don't make some performative deal about it. And I don't wear my ethno-religious identity on my sleeve. I try to think things through critically and objectively, but I can't ignore that fact. Zelensky himself tried to honor the victims of Babi Yar today, who were shot in a hole, driven out of Ukrainian towns that are now in Ukraine, and shot, thousands and thousands of Jews, women and children, shot in cold blood, and then put in a mass grave. And here it is. This is from Zelensky. So, it's pretty obvious why they made this.
But has he said a word about him applauding a Nazi veteran? Nothing, right? Nothing. Because the problem is, I think, he doesn't want to actually, I mean, I mean, who knows? Maybe he's just so stubborn he doesn't want to do anything that can be seen to bowing to criticism. But also, his problem is he is now in an alliance with and sometimes taking orders from the followers of Nazi veterans today. I mean, people like Beletsky, who we've talked about, who Zelensky met with last month to talk military strategy. These are his key people now.
And yeah, so I mean,
can he even speak out against a Nazi World War II veteran without drawing their ire? I mean, yes, he can do these performative things because also he has to, he's trying to keep Poland happy too, because Poland's unhappy with him right now. But right. Can he directly denounce a Nazi veteran while not pissing off people in Azov who follow militias like that? I'm not sure. Beletsky, by the way, there's an episode in July 2019, a few months after Zelensky took office. There was going to be a Ukrainian television network doing a joint broadcast with a Russian television network to promote dialogue between the two countries at the time when the Donbas war was still raging and Zelensky had promised to end that war. And so Beletsky, the founder of the Azov Battalion, he threatened Zelensky. He said, if you don't shut down this broadcast, we're going to do it for you and you're not going to like it because we're going to, basically he's saying we're going to be armed. Like if you don't shut it down, we're going to give you the answer to this broadcast. And he made a reference to his members being armed. So that was yet one of countless threats that Zelensky has faced from the far right, from neo-Nazis in Ukraine, for any effort that could promote dialogue, reconciliation with Ukrainians in the East and with Russia. And there's no doubt that he still feels intimidated by that today.
Yeah, and just 2 points on that. We can get it. Yeah. The Zelensky, in order to get from Kiev to the site of the Babi Yar massacre, traveled on a road that was renamed after 2014, after Stepan Bandera. So it was renamed after one of the arch Nazi collaborators whose forces oversaw pogroms, the killing of ethnic Poles. I'm pretty sure it's Roman Shukovich who oversaw the Lvov pogrom, but Bandera's forces were involved in other hideous massacres of Jews. And so they named that street for him. He's not going to rename the street. This is just performative. And the second point is Justin Trudeau has apologized to Zelensky for honoring Yaroslav Hunka. Forget about Zelensky for a second. He's just the Ukrainian leadership who leads a nationalist regime. Like, you cannot be neutral in Ukraine and give a voice to the 35% of the public or 40% that is ethnic Russian who've essentially been forced out of Ukrainian politics through this war. You cannot do that. So in many, I think it is a nationalist regime. It's fair to call it that. And why would Zelensky need an apology for the honoring of Yaroslav Hunka? I understand from a PR point of view, it embarrassed him, but that would be like a foreign leader apologizing to a US president for honoring George Washington or the Minutemen. I mean, Yaroslav Hunka was one of the founding fathers, or you could say he's one of the Minutemen of the Ukrainian nationalist regime that reigns today, whose soldiers openly pay homage to the Waffen-SS Galicia, where Waffen-SS Galicia veterans have been honored since 2014 in the streets in official ceremonies. So why would he actually need an apology? He doesn't really want an apology. It's just embarrassing because he's trying to get more weapons. And as you see, what's happening in Washington, having a harder time of it than ever before.
You know, to your point about how Zelensky can't be neutral on this, he has to side with the ultra-nationalists. To underscore that, I've told the story before, but just briefly, when he was in his first few years of office, he appointed a friend of his named Sergei Savoko, who was also from Donbass. They worked together on Zelensky's comedy productions. And he appointed this guy, Savoko, to Ukraine's National Defense Council, some similar name to that. And his mandate was to promote dialogue with the Donbass. And when Savoko tried to undertake that mandate, he delivered a speech in Mariupol to try to promote having dialogue with Ukrainians in Donbass, right, to bring the country together to end the Donbass war. He couldn't finish his speech because members of the Azov battalion and their party, the National Corps, attacked him and beat him up. And Zelensky, a few weeks later, rather than standing up for his friend and now official, fired him. He let him go. And Beletsky, the Azov leader, said, this is great. There's one less pro-Russian in the government. So that's just an illustration of how absolutely ultra-nationalists do control the government and have a veto through violence, as Lev Galinkin likes to say, over policy. And exactly why for Trudeau to apologize to Zelensky, it means nothing to Zelensky. If Zelensky was really sorry about applauding a Nazi, he would say so right now, but he's not. He's not sorry because he's in a de facto alliance with those people.
Yeah. So there are hundreds of hack reporters in Kiev, or as they call it, Kiev. And the longer they say it takes them to say that E, like Kiev, that's how long they want this war to last. They love it. And none of them have asked Zelensky about this, have they? Like he hasn't commented.
I've seen nothing. No, I've seen nothing on this.
So they're protecting him.
Yeah.
And as I said what was it? Whatever comedy club I last performed with Jimmy Dore at, like they're just telling him, some State Department officials telling him, like, we need you to not run for re-election anytime soon and cancel elections because we need a Jewish guy to cover for all this Nazi stuff. Like, that's your main utility. So the U.S. is pushing him to not have elections. And who stands in Zelensky's wake? Who's next? It's the chief of staff of the Ukrainian military who posed and took proud selfies with a photo of Bandera, a Banderite. Like, Zelensky is not really a hardcore Banderite. He just is taking on this role because he's an actor and he's doing what is necessary in Ukrainian politics.
Absolutely. Zelensky's wife gave an interview to CBS News last week, and she basically admitted that he's not very popular. It was a very somber interview. She was asked if Zelensky plans to run again. And she basically said, like, you know, if the Ukrainian people would want him to run again, if, you know, things, she gave a very sort of dire assessment of his prospects, maybe recognizing that his leadership has been a disaster for their country. And that if he tried to run again, despite all the hoopla in the West, if it was a fair election, I'm not sure he would even win.
I mean, he was always a Russian speaker himself, and now he pretends like he doesn't understand Russian words. He would do performances with the Russian leadership in the audience. He's now bombing part of his base that helped him win in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely.
that's why he won by so much, because he didn't put forward an agenda. Zelensky didn't say, here's what I believe in, and this is my... You know, he just said, we're going to try to do the Minsk Accords. We're going to try to do peace. And the whole country was so exhausted with the civil war that the U.S. was pushing and NATO was pushing that they voted for him because they thought he'd get them out of it. And now he's bombing half the people that voted for him.
It's very similar to Obama, where Obama was like this blank canvas upon which anybody could project their wishes for the country. And that was pretty much Zelensky, too. He wasn't from the corrupt elite. Although he was backed by the corrupt elite, by Kolomoisky, an oligarch who also funded Azov. But, you know, he didn't come from the main factions. And in the Maidan in 2014, he hadn't really taken a position. And he had still performed in the Donbass. So it appeared as if he could be someone who could bring everyone together. And look, I mean, people debate this. I do think he took some concrete steps, whatever his own motives were. And his own level of awareness about the nature of the war. He did take some steps that were concrete early on that were in the, you know, toward peace. He signed this German-backed formula called the Steinmeier formula to implement the Minsk Accords, but it got blocked at every turn. The far right stood up to him. They had, you know, they threatened his life, as we've talked about a lot. And he had no political backbone and also no support from Washington. He caved, and here we are.
Well, this is a fascinating moment to use as a prism for examining the contradictions of liberalism in the West.
You've been listening to another episode of Gray Zone Radio. This was the first half of Friday's Gray Zone live stream, in which Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté covered the international scandal that unfolded when the Liberal Party of Canada's Justin Trudeau honored a Ukrainian Nazi veteran of the Waffen-SS, and the dark history it forced to the surface. You can watch the full episode of this live stream and get notified of future live streams by subscribing to The Gray Zone on YouTube or signing up for our newsletter at thegrayzone.com, where you can also read The Gray Zone's investigative journalism. The audio of this live stream is also posted on the Max Blumenthal podcast, which you can find on podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter, Telegram, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. I've been your co-host, Christopher Weaver.
Hi, I'm Nita Valens, and this is a Fund Drive moment. I'm here to remind you that our listeners are the most reliable source of income for KPFK. Yes, that's you, making up over 90% of our annual budget. With your gift right now, you could move us closer to our goals and help us shorten on-air fundraising. Please call 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. Thank you.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Mann, the host of Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. I have a great opportunity for you. Thursday, October 5th at 6:30 p.m., there's a benefit for the death row prisoner, Keith Lamar, who truly is a philosopher king. He's a black man on death row for a crime he didn't commit, and we're having a Freedom First concert for him. The amazing Keith Lamar, fortunately, just got his execution bumped, but now we're going to spend all this time trying to get him out. On either voicesfromthefrontlines.com or kpfk.org, you can hear the Voices show we just did with Keith. We're going to have a great hour-and-a-half jazz concert in which Keith is going to do spoken word, after which Keith and I are going to do our usual frickin' frack. We know each other by now real well. He's a brilliant man. You got to come. You're going to have a transformative experience, plus meeting people from the Strategy Center and from Voices. You do not want to miss this. Go on thestrategycenter.org. Scroll down, get a ticket, come out Thursday, October 5th at 6:30. Eric Mann from Voices, take care of yourself.
Please help keep independent journalism alive and KPFK Radio strong. Become a Sustainer Circle member of KPFK by pledging at any level. $10, $20, $100 per month, whatever suits you. This is Verdeen White of Earth, Wind, and Fire, encouraging you to make your tax-deductible donation today at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org.
This